Groovy Joe, aka Don't Mind Me.
Okay, the real host, whenever you're ready.
Dude. Will the real host of the podcast please stand up? Another episode of the It's Just Jokes podcast. As always, my name is Joshua Chapman, aka Slim Balor, aka Baby Honest, aka Mr. Take Your Girl in Front Your Face. I am here with my co-host, first Jesse Pink.
What up?
Aka Dolomite P, aka Baby Samoa Joe, aka Groovy Grizzly. Why? Because he keeps it raw on you hoes. Next is Kobe Price.
What up?
Aka the homie Kobe, aka Mr. The Price is Right, aka Kobe. And last but certainly not least, Derek Small.
Hi, Mom.
AKA D Smalls, AKA Anthony Mackie Jr., AKA Damn, Derek, where'd you find this pod? Shout out to Dre for everything behind the scenes and for the intro music. We appreciate you, sir. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Feeling good, bro. Feeling good.
Ready to let the world know my argument.
Feeling like Superman over here.
Same. I have the, you can't see it, but it's a black Superman
shirt. Oh, yeah, I can tell. I can tell. Yeah. For clarity, I'm wearing a Cam Newton Patriots shirt. That's why it's a Superman. Josh is actually repping Superman.
Which is a little ironic, but we'll get to that in a second. Because today is all about goat talk. Not about, you know, actual goats, because, you know, fuck them, whatever. Unless you're putting them in a stew. Unless you're putting them in a stew, whatever. It doesn't matter. But yes, today's episode is... We are making an argument for something being the GOAT of whatever. So the greatest podcast of all time. We don't even have to make the argument. Is this one? It's just jokes. But each of us has prepared an argument. We're going to lay into it and then eat, you know, allow for some rebuttal. And so, yeah, we got that all set up. So I'll go first. My argument is that Captain America, Winter Soldier, is the greatest non-Avengers level comic book movie of all time. And so what I mean by non-Avengers level is not this huge sort of team-up type movie where there's 15, 20 characters in it. Because obviously if you put, you know, Winter Soldier against something like Infinity War or any of the X-Men movies that were good, you know, X-Men Last Stand or whatever, like, you know, it's not gonna, I didn't mean Last Stand. I can't think of all the X-Men movies in a row, but like,
Endgame,
you know,
Endgame,
yeah. those sort of movies, obviously it's not gonna be. That's a completely different scale in the movie. The stakes are higher, all that sort of stuff. And so what I mean is something smaller, you know, a character-driven movie. So we're talking Dark Knight, Logan, all those sort of movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, that sort of stuff. So my argument for one starts with, for me, a great comic book movie is rewatchable. So I can pop this in anytime if it comes on TV, sit down and watch it. Winter Soldier has that. It's great. It's fantastically paced. It's great action movie. It's very grounded and real in that action. It's not a whole bunch of like, all right, this CGI looks super fake. Like, no, like this is, the Russo brothers did a great job in making this feel like, not an indie movie, but something that was, you know, very based in reality. Which for something like Logan's a great movie. It's a great movie, but it's not rewatchable. You don't want to, you have to be in a mood to watch Logan. You have to know going into that movie, all right, I'm going to sit down and want to watch the movie. It has to be able to, you have to be able to watch it without real context, right? So Winter Soldier, again, you get that throughout the entire movie, the Russos are sort of reintroducing you to Captain America, right? Like he had the first Avenger movie and he had Captain America First Avenger and he had First Avengers, but the Russos took over his story in Winter Soldier, and they sort of have to reintroduce you to this character all over again. But within the first 10 minutes, you get adjusted that Steve is not from these parts, from his, you know, notebook that he's carrying with all the stuff he needs to go Google and stuff that he needs to go look up. You get that he is different than everybody else in terms of his physique and his physicality, right? Like there's the opening scene where he's just like lapping Falcon the entire time and barely breaking a sweat. You also get like arguably one of the best opening fight scenes when he's on the boat and he's just running through people and he kicks the shit out of somebody and they go flying over the boat. Like, you get very quickly, oh, this is like, this dude is completely different from everybody else. You also get the sort of the backstory with Bucky that, you know, he's visiting the Smithsonian, and, you know, Bucky was the only Howling Commando to have lost his life, and how much Bucky means to him and all that kind of stuff. You get their backstory throughout it. And you get that Bucky has been experimented on, all that sort of stuff. And so, again, certain movies like Logan, again, I don't mean to pick on Logan, but that's a movie that has to have a lot of context for you to feel a sort of way about it. Like, when Wolverine dies in that movie, if you have no idea who Wolverine is, you sort of get it sad, but it's not like a heartfelt tug of strings emotion like you would if you had already been with them throughout this entire journey. And Dark Knight does a good job of, you know, doing the same thing as well, where you don't have to have a ton of context, but we'll get to some of the faults of Dark Knight, which is next. It also has a great cast, and it has a great cast that everyone plays their role, and it's a strong ensemble performance. Whereas something like Dark Knight, I would make the argument that Dark Knight is great because of Heath Ledger's performance, and not necessarily that, you know, there's faults I can find in Christian Bale's Batman that I can get to in a little bit later if anyone bringing that up as an argument. But it's so grounded in that Heath Ledger steals every single moment that he's on screen, and that his Joker is so dynamic every single time he's there that the characters have to play off of that. And that's great and makes for a great film. But if you replace Heath Ledger with Matthew McConaughey or whoever, it's not the same thing. It's not the same movie. It loses a lot in it, right? Like, there's a strong argument that Dark Knight makes the entire Dark Knight Rises trilogy, right? Or the entire Dark Knight trilogy. And while you could say Winter Soldier is sort of like the jumping off point for the Captain America trilogy, like, Captain America First Avenger is a very good movie. Captain America Winter Soldier is the best out of the three, I think, but also Civil War is a great movie as well, right? But Winter Soldier, like, everybody plays their role so well and is written so well that it's not necessarily hinging on one character, one actor going above and beyond. So for those reasons, I think Winter Soldier is the best comic book movie, non-Avengers level, of all time. I will be taking questions now.
Now, I'm just going to hop in because I don't have much to argue, especially from the Marvel standpoint. I just rewatched all the MCU movies like towards the beginning of this pandemic, and Winter Soldier was at the top right there, kind of a 1A, 1B situation with Infinity War. My thing is about Dark Knight. I actually get your point. I get your point about how Heath Ledger as Joker just lifted the entire movie to a whole different level. Mm-hmm. My comment about Dark Knight, not even so much arguing it's better, but bringing it up as what I thought, I still think is the best movie, superhero movie of all time, is that we saw, I mean, what was that, 2008, I want to say it came out? Yeah. We kind of saw the impact that that movie alone had on several other comic book movies after that, in terms of, because you saw it in Dark Knight. It was a darker theme movie, and we saw that with Superman. We saw it in a couple of the MCU movies. We saw that.
Oh, I know what Superman. You're talking about the first
thing. Yeah, whichever the
Man of Steel. Man of Steel.
Yeah, man. There we go. Man of Steel. So it wasn't just Superman, but yeah, we saw the influence that it had on multiple superhero movies, even outside the DC universe. Not so much from a writing standpoint, but more so from a, we're going to have this a little darker. Where you, like, previous generations are up to like more upbeat, more uplifting superhero movies, but we've seen since Dark Knight, like, they've decided to go in the darker lane with their characters and with their lighting, every single aspect of a movie. And that all kind of stems from what Dark Knight showed you. Like, you can make a whole different kind of level of a superhero.
My counterpoint to that is that you're correct that there are superhero movies and even TV shows, franchises that have leaned more into darkness. But I think that the point about Man of Steel doesn't hold up is because that movie didn't need to be as moody and as dark as it was, because that kind of goes against what Superman is and represents. You made Superman sort of like, you made him a little bit too much like Batman. And the whole point about Superman is that he's overly optimistic. He has too much faith in humanity. he thinks too highly of people and all that kind of stuff. And so where he's the optimist, Batman is a cynic. And therefore, when they're together, they're sort of like this perfect marriage of like balancing each other out, right? Like Dark Knight works, obviously. But then that was like, okay, let's do all of the DC movies like that. Like Aquaman was like that. Like, you know, there's another one I'm thinking about, Batman versus Superman. They're like, you go back and watch that movie, they're almost two sides of the same coin. Like, they're not like, they're supposed to be this great butting of the heads, but it's not really the same. It's not really that feeling that you get, because like Superman's kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this, like that sort of thing. Like, I don't know if I really want to like continue to save humanity. And there's a missed opportunity, in my opinion, for how they could have done that with Superman and made that effective. But the fact remains that, like, yeah, they did make that dark. They made DC dark to begin with, but you can also argue that they shouldn't have for a lot of these movies because it didn't fit the tone of the character.
That's fair. And I will also say, I mean, you touched on yourself with Heath Ledger. That was probably one of the, shoot, I think that's the best performance I've seen in Superman.
That's the best acting I think I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I was just going to say in a superhero movie, but seeing your life. And I think that, yeah, he kind of lifts the movie up, because Christian, I mean, I liked him as Batman, but I wasn't too over like, oh my gosh, this is the perfect Batman.
There's a good argument that Ben Affleck is a better Batman than Christian Bale.
There's an argument for that. There's a true argument for that, but I'm gonna lean in. I'm gonna make the case for The Dark Knight, because Heath Ledger did a phenomenal job, but then let's also not forget that the circumstances following what happened after his performance, like his passing and the way how he passed, that also elevates the legacy of his, not only his performance in that scene, but also his acting. And then also what we heard from his acting methods, right? There were reports that he was listening to hyenas laugh in one of the hotels that he was staying at while shooting The Dark Knight. He would constantly try to mimic that laugh for like hours straight. But I am going to say The Dark Knight, because The Dark Knight really encapsulated an imperfect hero. Technically, every superhero is important, but like the nature of the Batman character, it made those like type of imperfections more than the superhero characters. And then I think that draws back to the realism of The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight, don't get me wrong, it's a superhero movie, but it has a lot of replay value because it's also a drama too. Like, you are seeing you're seeing these emotions, you're seeing these feelings, you're seeing this complexity, not only from this character, from Batman, but you're also seeing this complexity from someone as the Joker. It also did a good job of showing a good evil villain arc, because while we're talking about the phenomenal performance of Heath Ledger, let's not forget the way how Two-Face was created. The way how they sat and marinated and created Two-Face in the entire thing, and then also playing off of Two-Face being off of the quotable, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to live yourself to be the supervillain? Do you want to die?
Would you rather die a hero or live to see yourself become a villain?
And Two-Face essentially embodies that. And so, like, the multiple metaphors that you see, one of the largest quotables that you see, although it is from Heath Ledger, I think that puts Dark Knight, give a little bit edge than your movie, Josh. I mean, hell, Dark Knight came out in 2008, and 12 years later, people are still revisiting and looking at that movie for the particular concepts, the cinematography that was even in there. It's also still being used as a playbook as well, because it had one of the best Marvel directors, in my opinion. Mm. So it's still, I can understand where you're coming from with The Dark Knight, because that is, and in a sense, Heath Ledger, like, just LeBron's that entire...
No, for sure. He was LeBron in...
entire performance, however...
2015, essentially, like...
Yeah, right, that's true. But I think that's a case of, like, you have a stellar performance from one actor. But if you look at all the other actors, though, it wasn't like he had to pick them up to be great. It was that he was on a phenomenal Hall of Fame run, and everybody just had to try to live up as best as they can. If he scales back a little bit, that's still a phenomenal movie.
I think that, like... I think if he scales back, it's a very good movie. And the reason I say this is because, again, there's problems that I have with Bale as Batman, most notably that he's a great Bruce Wayne. He encapsulates the suave, where Bruce Wayne is really his alter ego, right? But as Batman, he's so limited in the fact he doesn't create any of his own stuff. He has Morgan Freeman's character do that. I'm forgetting the name. Alfred is doing a lot of the detective work for him. So right away, like the things that make Batman special as Batman, the detective and the engineer of him, are already not there. And then on top of that, like, he comes off as very, like, he's a Batman that almost doesn't want to be Batman. He spends a lot of the movie talking about when I can put this away and put this behind me. And that's sort of a departure from actual Batman, who was obsessed with the job of being Batman and arguably doesn't spend enough time as Bruce Wayne and allowing himself to decompress and all that sort of thing. And again, like, it's hard for me to give... I completely understand what you're saying, because again, Heath Ledger undoubtedly had the greatest acting performance I've seen in a movie with him as Joker. Like, he was so, like, and when I say that, I mean, like, every time you come on, he comes on screen, especially the first time you watch it, he is so, like, you're so tense in terms of, like, what is this guy gonna do? You have no idea. He zags when you think he's gonna zig, right? Like, he does, like, all this other stuff that you just don't see. And he's a gangster, is essentially, in this movie, right? Like, and that's a different take on Joker, but it's a take that works. It's a take that challenges Batman. But in terms of a movie, I mean, you talked about a flawed superhero or an imperfect superhero. You have Steve Rogers, who is the face of American superheroism, openly defying his government, openly saying, like, no, this Big Brother-ish, 1984-ish that you guys have going on, you're wrong. Like, we're doing this all wrong. And he's dragging everyone else along in the Avengers with them, or, you know, not the Avengers, but Black Widow, Falcon, Nick Fury along, and be like, what's going on right now is wrong. Like, I'm sounding the alarm bells because there's clearly something going on here. And it reveals that Hydra is behind all of this. And if it wasn't for Steve, like, the Avengers would be in a very different place because everyone was complacent with these sort of things. And so it also has themes of, you know, government oversight and all that kind of stuff. And how far are we willing to give away our freedom and all that kind of stuff? Plus the story with him and Bucky, him feeling conflicted. And this is the one fight that a dude that was made to fight walks away from. He's like, no, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm not, because I'm so loyal to you as a friend. I'm gonna allow you to take me out if that's what this calls for.
So just real quick, I kind of have a question to pose, and I want to get your opinion. Like Kobe kind of stated, I'm not necessarily anti your statement about Winter Soldier being the best one, but where do movies such as the MCU Spider-Man movies come into play? Because I kind of believe those have great cast. You know, you have Spider-Man's friend, I forget his name in the movie, who I think it is Ned, who's helping him, you know, along the way and with the tech stuff. You have, you know, Spider-Man himself, you know, who is great, you know, in my opinion. I love those performances. And to me, those are not necessarily team-up movies, but you're getting a wonderful performance from not only Spider-Man, but even, like, the supporting cast. So, like, where do those movies kind of fit in comparison to, like, Winter Soldier, I guess, being the best one?
I think both of them are in – I have Far From Home above Homecoming. Think they're both in my top 10, that they're both very good. I just, like, there is, but again, Homecoming or Far From Home, there is a certain level of, you have to be up on things in order to understand, right? The movie is dealing with Peter Parker in the aftermath of not only Endgame, but also in losing a father figure and a mentor in Tony Stark. And he feels a type of way about it, right? Like, in Homecoming, he also is... you have to have seen, like, you don't have to have seen Civil War, but, like, it really helps to have seen Civil War to understand, like, you know, this kid that has been called on to help an Avenger and help his, you know, his hero and all that kind of stuff, and why he's so excited and so jittery to not, you know, be in school and all that kind of stuff, and why he's sort of, like, overstepping his boundaries or going along that way. So there is a level of, like, previous watching that you do need to have in order to understand those movies. And to be honest, that's not even the Spider-Man that gave me the most trouble. It was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. That was like, all right, this is, because it has all those elements. It's super, super rewatchable. You'll watch it without any context. It has a great story. Personally, if I'm splitting hairs, I always lean a little bit more towards the live action than the animation, because I just personally feel like, as if you're portraying a character, it's harder to do that, actually having to physically be that character. And doing that on screen and all that kind of stuff than it is to voice record. But that's, like, the slightest of hair. That's why I, like, very slightly have Far From Home above that in terms of, like, Spider-Man movies, period. Because, like, it's such a goddamn good movie. But yeah, like the MCU Spider-Man movies are super good too.
Okay. No, that's valid. That's valid.
Is there anything else anyone needs to add? Like, I feel like I laid out my case pretty well.
The case well, but like if we keep diving into it, you know we're gonna keep going. We're gonna keep going back and forth on it. That's why I said this is probably our most formal podcast.
Yeah, so like honestly, like when I, and I'm gonna wrap this in a second, but like Winter Soldier, Into the Spider-Verse, Dark Knight, even Logan to a degree, like all of those, like they're so good. They're all so good, right? They're so good for different reasons. And if you were to say
like in a one category and then be like 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D,
Yeah, like if you were to say Logan, if you were to make an argument for that, because of the weight that it carries and all that sort of stuff, and it's Hugh Jackman's last performance as Wolverine, I'm not gonna get mad at you, right? That was a very emotional movie. I've only seen it once because I was like, I don't need to cry about this again. Like, I just don't, right? But like, yeah, if you were to say that or Into the Spider-Verse or, you know, like you said, Dark Knight, I'm not gonna be like, all right. I'm not gonna like be like, no, it has to be like, I'm gonna like, all right, that I understand it, right? Like, but I just think that all the factors combined makes Winter Soldier such a good movie. Like it's and again, the pacing for a two hour 15 movie, it's the pacing of this is so good. They space it out so well. Like you get Captain America, the suit looks cool that he's wearing, and there's, you know, levity in throughout the movie. There's jokes and all that kind of stuff, but also like there's real consequences that happen on the other end. And also Bucky is made to look like Cap's equal throughout the entire movie. Like they're sitting up there trading hands on the freeway and all that kind of stuff. Like it's not like Cap's just beating up on some dude. Like it very much looks like Bucky's gonna take out Cap. So, and that was my argument.
So you guys, you know, you and the audience, you all know I wouldn't be me if I didn't have a food take for this episode. So my
fans, bro, he like, y'all know me, bro. You already know Dougie Smalls.
So my argument is that Wendy's is the best fast food restaurant out there. It's better. It's better than Popeyes. Better than Chick-fil-A. It's definitely shitting on McDonald's. So, yeah. And I'm going to start off by just giving them a round of applause for their consistency. You all remember the yellow packaging that Wendy's used to have back when we were younger?
I do.
Shit was fire then, all right? And it's still fire now in 2020. So let's give it up for their consistency, first of all, right? They've always been around. You know, let's just give it up, right?
They're more consistent than any relationship I had. That's facts.
Talk about it. My second argument for Wendy's is kind of, I guess you can say it's subjective because who really is pure in the fast food industry in terms of how they make their items. But I think Wendy's is up there when it comes to using fresh ingredients, right? You have all these
Damn, that's a great argument.
Oh yeah, come on, let's talk about it, right? So you have all these other, you know, fast food places, they claim to use fresh ingredients. Oh, we do this to our, you know, burgers. Oh, we're using 100% da 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 da. Like, no, Wendy's is about that talk. They talk the talk and they walk the walk, all right? You got the fresh lettuce, you got the, you know, the never pre-frozen beef, you know, whatever. I forget how they worded it in their commercials, but you
fresh,
know.
Fresh, never frozen beef, yep.
Yep, you know, you got that. Their chicken is just, mwah. Look, you know what I'm saying? Those chicken sandwiches.
Damn, they do be running out of burgers sometimes. Hold up, like.
Hey, that's number two, right? I ain't even gotten to the argument that context, I did steal this argument from another, I guess, if you want to call it podcast or YouTube channel. But I remember an episode of an ADD Great Taste. Somebody brought this up, and I'm going to bring it up again. The change that they made to their French fry recipe when they added sea salt, come on. Those fries were good even before then, but they added sea salt. They were okay, right? They weren't the best. They were okay. But then...
because you needed that little salt packet that came with it. And sprinkle that joint on there.
Used to open up about two of those joints, you know, and sprinkle it on the fries. But then, you know what the higher-ups said? They said, guys, we need something new. We need something better. And guess what they did? Those motherfuckers added sea salt to the thing, and those fries just took a leap, didn't they? Those fries took a leap. And then my last argument, food related, because I even have some non-food related arguments about Wendy's, is the signature lemonade that they offer. Let's talk about it. You got four flavors, right? You got the peach. I know y'all out there, y'all love peach flavor shit. I know. I be seeing. Yeah, y'all like the peach flavored lemonade, the strawberry lemonade. Don't even get me started on that. Then you got the all natural regular, you know, flavor lemonade if you want that, if you just want to have fun on a summer day, you know what I'm saying? And then you have the tropical berry. Four excellent flavored lemonades, right? That you can just add to your, and Wendy's lets you add it. It's not even that big of a charge, right? If you just want to change your regular fountain drink to a signature lemonade, it's not even that bad of a charge. So that's food related. And they have breakfast now. Shout out to Kobe for reminding me of that before the episode started. But I still have to try that honey butter chicken biscuit, whatever they call it. But those are my food related arguments.
Wow.
Let's talk about what they do for the community as well. So they have a campaign called the One Book for $1 campaign. Hey, I have not been this valid all season. You're gonna let me talk about shit today. All right, look.
Hey, G, Derek episode. Clear the room. This is a Derek episode.
Wendy's partners with the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, right? And if you donate books to them, those funds go to they help fund adopting children so that they can be out of the foster care system. What restaurant you know out here doing that? This one's for Jesse because I know he'll appreciate it. Wendy's has a whole page on their website dedicated to talking about how they're environmentally sustainable. So let's talk about how they use, you know, certain LED lighting in their new restaurants to conserve energy, how they support their workers, you know, and they make sure that their policies in place are, you know, valid. It's just a holistic argument, you guys. Like, Wendy's is just so goated. I don't even have anything else to say. I'm done.
You'd even pull out your big gun, the Frosty with the fries combo.
Classic.
He didn't even pull out the fact that, like, niggas went nuts after those spicy chicken nuggets got off.
The spicy chicken nuggets came, although they came back a little bit too slow. It's like, all right, like, we get it. Like, they're supposed to be spicy, nigga.
Damn. But that even, like, shows they listen to their consumers, because we were asking for it for years. See, and they listen to the people. See,
Derek might have this. I will say that's a good one. When he talked about fresh ingredients, he didn't even talk about the salads, because the salads be really fresh. Wendy's makes the case, bro. It is the overall.
Damn, that's, like, a great argument. Fuck.
It's consistent. It's global. It's across the state. Everybody knows where it's at.
You know what? That's a good point too. Because, like, there's always a restaurant be like, all right, this is the bad so and so. Like, that's the bad McDonald's. Like, don't go there, right? Like, I don't remember anyone saying that about Wendy's.
I've never had a terrible experience at a Wendy's. Never.
You don't really hear that.
And that says a lot, because there are even bad Popeyes out here. Oh, my gosh. We've all been to a terrible Popeyes.
No. Even a good Popeyes can be bad on some days.
Yeah.
When a good Popeyes messes up, it messes up. It's like a Lil Wayne verse today.
But on the Popeyes tip now, the best of Popeyes is blowing Wendy's out the water.
Yeah, and let's talk about this too. Yeah, and let's really talk about this. Let's start to get some counter arguments in here.
Because, like, when they have that spicy, fresh out of the grease, they pour that joint out, the biscuits are fresh, all that kind of stuff. You get home and you take, like, fresh Popeyes, you're erythral. Like, there's nothing that comes close to it.
It's not. And then I like how Derek, like, tried to put two things out. One, saying how much Wendy's is part of the community, like, and being very charitable, is that Popeyes this year didn't donate over $1 million to the NOLA community in response to Black Lives Matter. Okay, that's one. Especially a part of how, like, Popeyes has its roots in the Big Easy. But okay, we're gonna act like that didn't happen. That's cute. We're also gonna sit up here and act like Popeyes also is not leading the charge in the majority of its restaurants turning into not just sustainably friendly, but, like, LED silver sustainably friendly. So when we say LED or LEED friendly, we're talking about the different standards. So, like, you have bronze, you have silver, you have gold, and nowadays it's platinum. Platinum basically means, like, you're running majority off of environmentally sustainable works. And for the most part, I'll say a lot of Wendy's drinks, they're around the bronze area. A lot of them. But Popeyes is starting to turn a lot of their restaurants into lead-friendly buildings, and they're hitting silver. Now, I will say, not a lot of Popeyes buildings are turning silver. There's not. Some of them are just look like construction sites. I ain't gonna hold you. But we're not gonna sit up here and act like Popeyes. There's starting to be a growing case that Popeyes not only can do the same thing that Wendy's can do in terms of being environmentally conscious, it can probably step up its game a little bit more. And they sell nothing but chicken, G. And how are some Popeyes restaurants becoming silver-lead friendly? And they sell chicken? I don't know. Let's also talk about the fact that like Popeyes also led the charge in their spicy chicken sandwich. We're going to sit up here and act like this chicken sandwich, then have everybody in a fucking rave. We're going to really sit up here and act like this. My fat ass remembers.
It had the block hot. It had the block hot. Yeah, that's right. It did.
It did. I'll say this. My fat ass remembers when Wendy's did put the sea salt on their fries. That was also the same year when Taco Bell switched to a Doritos Locos Tacos. That's the same damn year. And they did a price comparison between the two. Taco Bell had a 200% jump over Wendy's salted fries. So even though Wendy's culturally was doing good, it didn't push that many numbers with them salted
fries. Okay. But that's sort of confounded because, like, how many people are just going to Wendy's just for fries versus, like, you can go just for some, like, Doritos Locos Tacos. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the whole meal.
So I kind of have one point, and, you know, this is just me trying to just stick to my guns, you know, stick to my argument. So for
that's
to
a Josh, great argument.
So, that's a good one. It's a strong one.
To Josh's point, yes, the best of Popeyes, you know, they're out here – catching touchdowns over Wendy's. They're doing their thing, right? The best of Popeyes is the best of Popeyes. But let's talk about Popeyes' whole menu. And not even their whole menu not being that great. Like, they have those weak-ass po' boy sandwiches at Popeyes that nobody eats, right? People usually go for the main chicken, you know, sometimes the chicken tenders. I've indulged, you know. But also, this may be, you know, not a good take, but who really is in the mood a lot for Popeyes more so than eating Wendy's? I can go to Wendy's way more often and be in the mood to eat Wendy's than I can for Popeyes, to me, right? Popeyes is something you eat, you know, you like, oh, damn, like I really want some Popeyes today. Let me go over there and get, you know, a whatever, right? But Wendy's, you can constantly go to Wendy's. It may not be healthy, but you can constantly go to Wendy's, whereas Popeyes is more of a, not once in a while, but it's not a once in a while feel, but to me, it's just, the best. Popeyes on its best day is definitely valid as hell. But at the same time, Wendy's is just so goated holistically that it's like you talked about it. You have the Frosties, right? That's just, they got dessert. They got you on breakfast. They got you on lunch, right? Their value menu out of this world. Let's talk about how many people have been held down by the 4 for $4. I know y'all out there.
I think that's what this is. I don't know if Wendy's inherently has more like, oh, I'm just going to go there off the strength of whatever. I think it's cheaper, so you're more likely to go there. But if Popeyes had like a value menu, you would have definitely been at Popeyes as much as you would have as Wendy's.
Hey, they need to step it up then. They need to step it up.
But to comment on what Derek said, Derek was like, it's not always healthy. That's not the case because, like you said earlier, Popeyes has a lot of fresh ingredients. Popeyes also sells salads, and their salads
Popeyes or Wendy's?
Not Popeyes, sorry. Wendy's. Wendy's also sells salads. And those salads ain't just shit that you just like put together, like you just get from making the burgers, just toss in. No, like they actually come pre-prepared fresh. Like, I had one of the strawberry salads multiple times during the summer, and that shit was really fresh. So even if you and I in the mood for a burger at Wendy's, you can get a healthy salad. Wendy's is, that's a good argument. Wendy's is like holistic, a more complete. On the idea of like holistic and very versatile, the complete package, Wendy's. But we're talking like best all times. That's, I don't know. If we're going off of taste or just like, not even like taking out the versatility, then the usual suspects, Chick-fil-A comes in here. Outside political views too, Chick-fil-A comes in here, Popeyes comes in here. You start to have those arguments. And then I like how you said more versatile, because then Zaxby's might have something to say.
I'm still holding to my guns, but I'm not gonna act like Zaxby's not fire. All right, I'm not gonna act like it's not fire.
Derek's still right though, because Derek worded as well. He said overall most complete fast food. Zaxby's is very regional. Is
so good though.
Good, but he said overall more versatile. We're talking about
son, Zaxby's is so good. I've legitimately, there's one like in Virginia, like an hour away. I've legitimately contemplated going there just for Zaxby's.
No, you're not, bro. If I was even like in the mood, like slightly, like I'm bored today, I'd mess around and drive to Columbia. You know, that's what, an hour 45? Look, an hour 30 if you hit the gas. Like, yeah. But like Jesse said, I'm working in the holistic argument to my argument.
Yeah, that's the thing. Derek worded this really well. If holistically, G. He said holistically, and that fits. It's the best fast food chain holistically out here. That's true. There's not a lot of Chick-fil-A's in New York. There's not a lot of Chick-fil-A's in LA and all these places, bro. It's not a lot, bro. You can find the Mid-Wendy's dead ass in Missouri. Ain't no Chick-fil-A's dead ass in Missouri, bro. You can find Wendy's in Montana. You really can't find a Chick-fil-A in Montana, bro. The only fast food chain that can compete with that for real is McDonald's. And that's just off of accessibility, how cheap as hell they are, and other unethical things. That's it. But man, we was just talking about taste. I don't know, bro. Wendy's probably start going down the list.
But even taste-wise, though, y'all have had those chicken sandwiches, dog. Like,
yeah, it's good, but also I'm not going to sit up here and say I wouldn't take.
Oh, no. I mean, you know.
Zaxby's.
There are tiers to this, but Wendy's is up there, though. Like, Wendy's is up.
Pause. Do niggas still eat at Bojangles?
I have it every once in a while. It's actually really good.
Back at a restaurant when you eat at Bojangles?
No, I had to go to the drive-thru out there. Thank you, sir.
Derek, I think we're all kind of with you. I just have one question, just one small question. And you ain't got to take that long for us, because we're going to move on real quick, because you got a song.
Yeah, what's up?
Where does Subway fit into all this?
Like, you're asking, like, number-wise, like, on a scale from 1 to 5, or, like, what are you asking?
Just where does Subway fit into your fast food equation? Yeah, where does it fit into your fast food equation?
Because I do go to Subway a lot. I don't know. So the thing with me, unless you're just like a person that likes to try a lot of different things, once you get locked into your Subway routine, you get locked in, right? So like when I go to Subway, I don't feel like I can eat like, oh, let me get the turkey roast black ham, whatever the hell, you know, sandwich on the menu. Like to me, I feel like I have to get either A, B, or C when I go to Subway. You know, if I'm feeling just weird, I'll order a pizza. But, you know, yeah, they got those little mini joints.
I beg your pardon.
They're not bad. They're not bad. But to me, you know, I can. What'd you say?
Nigga, you ordering pizza at Subway?
I've only done it like a handful of times. Relax.
Bro, right. Yo, getting the flatbread and be like, yeah. So like, give me the flatbread, put some sauce on that motherfucker, put some cheese.
But no.
I feel like Jerry puts pepper jack cheese on his pizza.
Not my pizza, my sandwiches. Pepper Jack goes crazy, but not my
pizza.
But no, Kobe, like for me, I can pull up to like Wendy's and know that I'm gonna at least consider way more on the menu than I will Subway. I have like 3 or 4 things max that I'd eat from Subway sandwich wise. That's kind of why
their cookies are fire though.
The cookies are fire, but they're not that consistent. Not every Subway has good ass cookies.
I don't know. I don't know where you've been where you had a bad Subway cookie.
For real. Not every Subway chain has consistent good fresh cookies. Versus a Wendy's where you will get a consistent good ass Frosty, whose cream machine also doesn't always
work. Let's talk about that. It's always working, ain't it? Look, it ain't never broke down on me.
Ain't never broke down. But we're gonna stop here and I'm gonna go ahead and pass this back to Kobe real quick so he can get to his point.
I like that. I like that. I like that segue right there.
Like that assist right there.
No, absolutely. Because now everybody knows my topic. What I'm bringing to the table is I'm arguing who the best passer of all time is in NBA history. And yes, is the best passer. And sometimes we think about the best passer. The people, as soon as you think best passer, you think Magic Johnson. I'm here to tell you it's not Magic Johnson. In fact, it's that Canadian boy named Steve Nash. Shout out to him, by the way, being born in Africa. So he is a brother. All right. Point one for him. No, Steve Nash, I had him as the best pure passer of all time. I thought about this a little bit, talked to my dad, just doing all this research, and I came down to Steve Nash. And the argument against Steve Nash is, and more about a Magic Johnson or a LeBron James type, is they're so much bigger. They can see over the tops of defenses. There are passes they can make just because of their height and because of their size. Fair point. However, my argument is more so in terms of passing ability and what they can do with the ball in their hands as opposed to everything else. And even if you've taken that to account, I still think Nash would beat those two. But let me break it down like this. I see Magic Johnson as the type of passer who he made passing fun. He made passing fun in the sense that even an easy pass, he made it look spectacular. Exactly. He brought a certain flair and flash to passing that you hadn't really seen up until he came to the league with his full court passes, his half court passes, the rockets he would throw. I mean, if you go through his highlight reel, he's making some passes that are just bullets. Like, you think he's a quarterback with the way he's throwing them. Other guys to consider were Jason Kidd, who kind of reminds me of Magic Johnson, just in a smaller frame. Jason Kidd, he brought order in chaotic situations. He could turn a steal into a bucket in half a second, and you'd be like, whoa, where did that happen? He also had the disadvantage of he wasn't a good shooter, but he could still make passes with guys sagging off of him. John Stockton, classic point guard, classic floor general. If there's a passing lane open anywhere, he's going to find it. He's going to get you the ball in the most sometimes predictable but just easy and consistent way possible. And he's not going to give the ball away. He's just not. That's not what he's going to do. Then you have a guy like Steve Nash, who I see as a combination in a way of all the great passers you've seen. I think Steve Nash embodies almost all of them. He has the flash that Jason Kidd and Magic Johnson bring to the table with his half-court passing, his behind-the-back passing, the behind-the-shoulder passing. I'm forgetting the name of it, but he almost trademarked the kind of pass where he would just bounce the ball off the floor, flip it to you, and you'd be right there to a man cutting right behind him. He had the same kind of – what's up?
Do you mean a bounce pass or what would that
– No, it's not a bounce. It's like a drop. I forget. He's like you drop it and then you just flick it with your hand. I forget the name of it though. And I was just looking this up the other day. But he kind of almost trademarked that. He almost trademarked the keep your dribble alive underneath the basket and you're still going to – there's a pass anywhere and everywhere out of that. He brought the same classic point guard qualities that Stockton did in the half court. And that if there was any pocket pass that could be made, he was going to make it no matter what he has to do, whether that's going between your legs, going over the top, alley-oop, whatever it is. There's no pass in his arsenal that he couldn't make despite being, I think, generally listed as 6 foot, 5'11". And he would make passing lanes when there were virtually be no passing lanes.
All right, so here's what I'll say to you, Kobe. I personally think it's LeBron because – yeah, LeBron has the advantage of being 6'8", 6'9", whatever he is, and having, you know, lanes that's 6 foot, whatever Steve Nash isn't going to be able to have. That being said, he also has to, like, there's not a whole ton of guys that are his size that are just great passers, right? Like, that's not necessarily the case, right? Like, you're starting to see that a little bit more now, but, like, he still has a special blend of passing. And also, like, he did this for years while playing beside an actual point guard, right? Like, most of his – it wasn't until this year that he actually was, like, I'm playing the point guard position and I'm setting off the offense. Like, it was kind of, like, de facto running through him anyways, but, like, he still had, like, a point guard. That being said, how much of Steve's – I don't want to say ability, but how much of him do we think as a passer do we have to – acknowledge or give credit to the system that he was also in the 7 seconds or less, where the literal goal is to get down the floor as quick as possible, create as much havoc, and then for Steve, who was already, yes, a great passer, but to Steve to hit the open guy. to hit a Joe Johnson, to hit a Sean Marion, to hit an Amari Stoudemire in transition in the corner, whatever.
Yeah, no, and that was something I was bringing up, that even in the system, and it's in all, even touching on LeBron, because I didn't want to bring up LeBron, what impresses me sometimes most about LeBron specifically is his patience. Yeah. Like he will just plot until that pass is available. He'll move guys around while he's on the floor with the ball in his hands. Just you go.
He'll
here,
move
you
guy. Go he'll move his own guys and he'll move defenders because he knows. All right, this guy's gonna be open in the corner, so the defense is gonna rotate this way. So I'm gonna hit the second guy over, but I'm gonna fake right. it to the first guy. Like that's so hard.
Right. No, that's difficult. With Nash is a lot. What impressed me most about Nash as a pure passer is that, like LeBron, it's also instincts, but at the same time, it's a lot of reaction. Because yes, you are sometimes the hardest passes are the ones where everything is moving fast. You are moving, like everything's moving so quickly. And as you as a passer, you're moving quickly, your body's moving quickly, but everything else is too. Like every single thing on the floor is moving at a rapid pace. It's not slow. So when you're doing that, every single pocket is going to get smaller. Every single passing lane is smaller, because if you're even a half an inch off while passing, while moving, it's the difference between the defender deflecting it versus an open, maybe not an open three, maybe contested three or catch and shoot open three, or the ball going out of bounds. There are passes Steve Nash will make where he would be on the move behind his head and he hasn't even looked at his teammate, it seems like, in 5 seconds, but he just knows, well, if you're here, and you're here, and you guys are doing this, there's a guy behind who's going to be wide open, ready to go. And I think for Nash, the system helps because everything did move quickly, but that's also something that could cause more chaos. And kind of like Kidd, he brought order to what could have been a chaotic situation. We see sometimes with James Harden, things can be a little too chaotic for them in a very, well, before D'Antoni was out, in a very sure. similar system. At least before they kind of slowed things down, they did a lot more iso ball. Nash brought that order to chaos, and he could do the same thing that LeBron does in terms of like, all right, I can identify every pass, but did so in a way it was just everything looked so much harder at times. Maybe because it was his size, and maybe it was because there was a lot of moving parts. But he was able to just have that flash and that substance, and like, a, oh my gosh, like. I didn't know that pass could be made before you did that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I have too many oppositions. I mean, of course, it does help that, like, these the other people that you all brought up, like LeBron and even Magic, you know, in his heyday, they were bigger, so it helped them. But, I mean, Steve Nash was really effective. And I think something that still gets brought up to this day, you know, when people argue is like, how did he win that MVP, right? But it could have been from things like this, Kobe, you know, like how you were describing about him being able to run the offense. I mean, I'm not saying it was, right? I'm not going to sit here and lie like I'm watching sports faithfully. But, you know, like for him to have won an MVP trophy when Kobe was in his, like, prime, you know.
I mean, some of that is, like, some of that is for Nash.
And it could have been the system, too. But, I mean, for him to have won that trophy, like, he had an impact, like,
some of that is on Nash's impact. I'm not going to sit up here and lie to you. But also, like, there's a good argument that LeBron should have more than 4 MVPs right now, right? Like,
yeah, it's a very strong argument.
With the exception of the year that Derrick Rose won MVP because, like, Derrick literally carried that 40-win Bulls team to a 62-win, and, like, the entire offense revolved around Derrick Rose being there and being an MVP level. Like, LeBron has had a good, especially this last year, like LeBron has had a very good argument that he's the most valuable player, you know, damn near every year. Like, yeah, Steph won and Steph deserved it and all that kind of stuff. But there's also moments where it's like, are we really giving this to the most valuable player, or are we just kind of sick of LeBron winning it in the same way that, like, Jordan should have won more MVPs? Like, you know, like.
Or are we taking this greatness for granted?
Yeah, we're getting voter fatigue and all that kind of stuff. And just because we don't expect this team to do as good as they did, now are we getting it to their best player? Like, that sort of thing. Like, MVP is a very tricky, like, argument.
I'll say this in defense of Nash, because he did win back-to-back MVPs. That first year, I think the Suns won, like, 62 games. The first year he was in Phoenix. The previous year, I think Mike D'Antoni was the coach that previous year. Very similar personnel. They won 28. They went from like a bottom of the league to best in the league, and it all kind of centered around him being there and what he did for the offense. The second year, we would almost forget, he did that without Amari. Amari played 5 games, and he was done for the season. Mm. So he did that full second season without a co-star. It was just Steve Nash and, I mean, Marion.
The Nashettes.
Like, the Nash and Nashettes. In a very – you can call it almost like what LeBron did with without Kyrie, but he did that with shooting fine, but he wasn't a scorer like that. He did that with passing. He did that with, I'm going to make everyone around me better. And people got paid. Like, people got money because they played with Steve Nash. Like, he made some –
Oh, Joe Johnson got the bag because he was in Phoenix.
He got
made. I mean, he's also a good scorer. I'm not going to sit here and lie either. But, like,
he got paid big time just because, I mean, Steve Nash made everyone around him. It didn't matter who you were or even what kind of player you were. He just made you better simply because – and he also wasn't the type of player that's going to take shots away from you.
That's fair.
His detriment and to his team's detriment. There were a lot of times when teams would be like, oh, you're going to pass a lot? Bet we're just gonna not play you as a scorer. Where you can be like, Nash, take those 20 shots instead of those 12. Like, we could use you as a scorer. Stop doing all the
That's fair. I have a side thing though. When you said that he makes everyone else better around him, he gets everyone else paid. That's pretty much what LeBron has been doing since he got into the damn league. I'm gonna just like put that out there, especially with his credible passing ability. But I'm not actually gonna use LeBron or Magic Irving in this. What about Chris Paul?
Chris Paul. I was hoping you went white chocolate. Damn.
Yep. What about Chris Paul? And what about white chocolate? Chris Paul, I'm going to start with Chris Paul. Chris Paul is considered one of, like, I'd say top 5 point guards, right? He's a floor general, right? And I know you're saying best passer. You're not saying point guard. You're saying best passer. But Steve Nash and Chris Paul are basically around the same time. Small stature, not that athletically gifted. They have to use a lot of their intellect, and they make the right passes. And they also are very cerebral in their shot selection and who they pass to. So why not even someone like Chris Paul? Chris Paul is just like Steve Nash in terms of being very consistent. Even in those New Orleans Hornets days, Chris Paul was giving everybody the blues. Even to this day, even when he was with OKC, Chris Paul led that OKC team. He led the OKC team not only to make it look like they virtually didn't give up nothing when they traded Russell Westbrook this season, but they also had a good playoff run too. Like, Chris Paul is also very valuable. And as Josh has mentioned before, I was going to put this out here, but Josh has mentioned this too. For all my listeners that don't know this, we might seem like we're old, but like we're all roughly in our early 20s.
YouTube, we're all 24 right now. Like,
Kobe, yeah, we're all roughly like
23.
Yeah, 23.
Derek's about to be 25, old ass nigga.
Yeah, right. We're old ass nigga. We're around the 23, 25 range. If you don't know this, man, YouTube Jason White Chocolate Williams. Please Google that man. Please YouTube that man and look at White Chocolate's passings. It is incredible. So why not them two? Why Steve Nash?
All right. So let me do White Chocolate. I think White Chocolate was a little more flash than substance. I think he it's either him or Jason Kidd as the two. I think I even put White Chocolate over Jason Kidd as the second flashiest passer the NBA seen, but after Magic. I think Magic was just, oh my gosh, just every single thing.
Yeah, that's always going to be my favorite part. It's like, no, you got to get him back. Get him back. And I had him in the post.
Magic Johnson, one of the most likable NBA legends.
I love Magic, bro.
Magic Johnson's so damn funny, bro.
This is a Magic Johnson stand podcast.
Bro, he be like, it's showtime, baby.
Yo, wait, hold on. Before Kobe gets back to this point, this nigga legitimately called the press conference like, I ain't gonna be here no more. He was just like, all right, Magic. Like,
he was like, I just wanted to tweet out and say, like, you know, Ben Simmons is a great player. They tell me I'm tampering? Nah, baby, I'm out.
I'm Magic like, bro, Johnson. I just want to show love. Like, what the fuck? Like,
I'm showtime.
It's showtime.
Oh, man.
Sorry. Anyways, back to back to White Chocolate.
Yeah, no. So I think that's White Chocolate. I mean, it was just a lot more flash and substance.
But you're talking about passes, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, we're talking about passes. I think he had a lot of
it. This man was doing Globetrotter passes, and it was right in the pocket.
No, that's fair. And I just also, I don't feel, I think as soon, you kind of see it, as soon as Mike Bibby came through, you could see like, oh, we don't need all of that extra, all that extraness with the elbows and that, like, just sometimes he could just make the simple pocket pass and the simple chest pass and be like, hey, man, we're straight. Like, sometimes you might be doing a little too much and you might do too much that would hurt us in that sense as a passer.
That's fair.
To that point, I was going to say, I would actually do the opposite for Chris Paul. He, to me, is one of the best. You could say he's the top three, top two, whatever, floor general I've personally ever seen. My big take against him is that I don't think he doesn't take enough chances sometimes as a passer. He's a very efficient passer. It's almost like the quarterback that doesn't want to throw an interception. Damn, but by like not Alex throwing the interception.
That is a great point.
But like a better Alex Smith. Like if Alex Smith could throw like 40 touchdowns. Yeah. But like he may not, he's going to be efficient. He's making all the efficient passes, the right passes. And he's going to like do the LeBron thing. Like everybody's going to move in where they need to be. But he may not always take the extra risky pass that could, yes, become a turnover for sure. And that's why turnovers can be so low. But at the same time, the reward could be so high. It could be a corner three because the guy misses barely. Or whatever the situation would be, wherever how the defense is set up. He is just like the ideal floor general. He's not going to mess up your offense. But sometimes you need a little bit of that mess to really thrive. And I think he really just likes to bring that in a very like militant way.
No, that's fair. I mean, when you say floor general, there's a reason why people call Chris Paul a floor general. He's very exact. Yeah, no. And that's very a good point. Because sometimes, like, if Chris Paul will, like, he'll easily be a pass, and he'll do this thing where it'll look like he's passing behind the defender's back, and he can easily make that bounce pass, but he just does that so the defender can slag off him, so you do a fallaway jumper. Chris Paul is very cerebral in that. So you like Nash because not only could he be cerebral, but he has a little bit of craziness to him.
Yeah, you add that craziness to it. You add a whole different – like there are passes that Nash is going to take, shots he's going to take that I don't think Chris Paul always would. And that's not a bad thing. It just – I think it makes Nash a little bit better passer. You could see better passes from Nash because he was like, you know what, I'm going to take a shot on this. And a lot more often with him because of his vision, because of his hand-eye coordination, his anticipation, his IQ, it worked out.
Man, we were having a great episode. These are some really well thought out arguments.
Yeah, that's
go us.
Jesse, that's what I said. Like, this is not
take
even.
Us home.
Yeah, that's what I said. Like, this is not even like a This is like a 4 scores and 7 years ago. This great nation produced one of the greatest superhero movies of all times, outside of the Avengers cast. Like, oh man. I like that assist. I'm just going to dish this out real quick. Pancakes are the best, hands down, pancake item you can ever put down on your plate. I'm going to do a little bit of counter arguments.
Wait. Did you say breakfast item or
pancakes are the best? Pancake item. You said pancake item. You said pancakes are the best pancake item. It's like, well, duh. Like,
see,
Jordans are the best Jordan type shoe.
What are we arguing about then? See, you know. But no, in all seriousness, though, pancakes are the best breakfast item that you can have. I'll just do all the counter arguments. I will say pancakes, waffles, French toast, that's the holy grail. A lot of people are arguing that's the top three that people typically like. So you know what? Are you crepe lovers out there? Y'all get the fuck out of here. Are you French toast lovers out here? Y'all can also get the fuck out of here. Because why would I, one, eat some toast that I can make at the crib? Two, why would I disrespect pancakes and make a thin
ass? Oh, you said regular. You said regular toast.
Yeah, regular toast. Regular toast.
Okay.
Regular toast. And two, for crepes, why would I disrespect pancakes by making some thin ass pancakes, bro? To me, crepes seems like a poor man's thing because it seems like you want to skip out on some batter. Okay. But let's go into the holy grail real quick. Let's go to French toast. Let's go to French toast. No, I will say this. Let me get the French toast real quick. A great piece of French toast can defeat both a pancake and a waffle. A great flight of French toast is so good, you damn near don't even need syrup.
if a restaurant has a French toast flight, they probably make some good French toast.
Shout out to Batter and Berry.
Right. Even though you supported R. Kelly. Nah, Batter and Berry's did support R. Kelly on the low. Nah, forget that. But I will say this. So I will put that in for French toast. French toast is actually so good that you can actually put it as a frozen breakfast menu, right? Like frozen French toast sticks. You don't really get that with waffles. If you try to like have like frozen waffles and
I disagree with that, but continue soggy. To cook.
They get soggy. And that's the same thing about pancakes. Pancakes, my heart. Pancakes can also do the same thing. When you try to warm up frozen pancakes, sometimes when you warm them up too hard, they get a little burnt edge on the side, a little too hard on the side. That happens. I'll give that to French toast. Waffles, I'll give it to waffles. A good waffle can really make a good day. People love Belgian waffles. It's also very versatile. You can put chocolate chips in waffles. You can put fruits in waffles. Hotel French waffles is always good. Hell, you even got a good cultural reference with waffles, which is chicken and waffles. I hear niggas out here eating pancakes and waffles. You don't really hear niggas out here eating pancakes and waffles, right? That's weird as hell. Nobody don't be doing that. Also, waffles is one of those things where like you can smush a lot of things with together and not feel like a fat ass. I can put literally two chicken breasts into a waffle and jar that in syrup and put that between two waffle sandwiches and people can be like, huh, that's nice. You don't even feel like a fat ass. I'll give that to waffles. I will also say, though, that not everybody has a good waffle batter. Not everyone has a good waffle batter. Not everyone has a good waffle batter. And not every hotel has best hotel waffles.
Son, it's really hard to... That's my argument. It's really hard to fuck up a waffle.
It's really hard. It's really hard to fuck up a waffle if your batter is not even hitting that well. But I will say this, though, about a pancake. And now I will get to my point about pancakes. It is true that sometimes you make your best pancakes at home. Sometimes you cannot get a pancake at the restaurant. If you want that nice little golden crispy butter edge, take your broke ass home and make you some pancakes. Sometimes that does happen. But I will say this about pancake, though. Pancakes are a little bit more versatile than waffles, and that you actually can put chocolate chips in them. You can put blueberries in them. You can put raspberries in them. You can put a multitude of different fruits in there. You can even mix up and put some desserts in there. Pancakes is one of the very most versatile because you can turn it quickly into a dessert very quick because it literally is like a little cake. You could do that. Also, pancakes is just rival with waffles in that it has its own. It has its own damn restaurant, dude. Like, you can either do IHOP or you can do Original House of Pancakes. Also, pancakes are very versatile because it's like, for waffles, you put different stuffs in waffles. There are different types of pancakes. You can do a silver dollar pancake. You can do a lumberjack pancake. It does not matter. The fact that you can even change the way how you make your pancake is very different. For a waffle, you can make a Belgian waffle and like what? You have like four big ass cubes. Now, with a lumberjack pancake, it's big as hell. It's stretching over your plate. You could do that. Or you can make little Japanese small pocket pancakes. Pancakes are hands down not only the most versatile, they're one of the most versatile. You can eat that shit at breakfast. You can eat that shit at lunch. I would know. I'm the certified brunch king. You can also flip that and turn that into a dessert too if you want to. Also, if you really want to, pancakes can arguably be healthy. A buckwheat pancake can slap. A buckwheat waffle? No. A buckwheat French toast? Get the fuck. No. You don't even want to do all that.
So, all right. Here's what I'll say.
My argument.
Here's what I'll say. I think we can all agree that French toast at its very best is better than anything else. Like some great French toast.
At its very best.
It's the Popeyes in this equation.
Exactly. However, there's some bad French toast out there. And so you're really rolling the dice on it. Like, you got to know that place has good French toast. I don't think you want to go and be like, oh, it's French toast good. Like,
That's why I said, if they have a flight, they're literally saying, try our French toast.
I'm agreeing with you. So for that reason alone, I have to put that three out of the trifecta. But it is so hard to mess up a waffle. It's so hard to mess up a waffle that you can go to the Holiday Inn, pour the batter in, make it yourself, pop it out, and that's a good, like, that tastes so good. That's how hard it is to mess up a waffle. Like, it's the taste of a waffle is like, even Eggos are like a decent breakfast, and they're there's a little bit of trial and error, like, okay, this has to be there, like, whatever. But you can dress up an Eggo, put some whipped cream or whatever on it. Like, you mentioned IHOP. I'm not really a fan no more of the IHOP because they have it comes from the box or whatever, like the powder deck. Like, it's just.
Yeah. And then I get that. I said hotel waffles, just like, look, a good French toast any other day, a good hotel waffle is good.
That's what I'm saying. A hotel waffle versus restaurant waffle.
But what hotel did you specifically point to that said they have good waffles?
I said Holiday Inn as an example. I didn't mean like specifically.
But here's my thing about that though. You're right. It's really hard to fuck up a waffle. It's really hard to make a good waffle. It really comes down to that batter, especially for hotel chains. Not every damn hotel makes consistently good waffles. A Holiday Inn might have a good waffle batter, but when you go to a Hampton Inn, nigga, that shit might be trash, bro. That's what I'm saying with the. It's not consistent all around.
Can I just say like a minor thing that have always made waffles better for me?
Go ahead.
When you spread syrup on a pancake, right? That syrup isn't always distributed evenly, in my opinion. Like, it'll sometimes drip more one way than the other. You know, you get sides of the pancake, you're like, damn, this shit dry. You know, a waffle has the little, you know.
The little squares.
Yeah, they have the little squares. When you pour the syrup in a waffle, you know it's going to hit all cylinders. You know what I mean?
You want to cut out.
That's why pancakes have always been two for me. Just because, like, with a waffle, you can evenly distribute the syrup. You can still dress it up the same way you can a pancake.
Yeah, you can still do that. Yeah, you can have your little cutout cubes and stuff. Yeah, that's what kids like. That's true. I understand that. You're a kid. That's why you like that. That's why you like your shit little cut up a little bit with the little syrups.
And relax.
Real niggas.
Why does this like become contentious?
Real niggas like they pancakes cut up. Hey, you right.
I wasn't even talking about the cut up aspect.
You had your time.
Now, hey, I'm gonna come in for Derek because I agree with him. It's always helpful to have that.
I will say this about pancakes though. You're right. It doesn't evenly distribute. It could not easily distribute. But you also can't forget the fact that pancakes are also one of the most absorbent when it comes to syrup too. Pancakes will soak up the shit out of some syrup. Soak it the fuck up. Whereas versus with a little waffle, you know, it's my little square right here. Then I gotta flip it over, then put my little squares right here. You don't have to do that with a pancake. You just drown that syrup on there and let it marinate. And the thing about pancake too, the more you slowly eat it, the more that syrup keeps seeping inside all of that buttery goodness, and it sits in there and it gets even sweeter.
But there is a limit, because at some point pancakes do become too soggy.
Waffles also become too soggy.
And I don't know if that's the same with waffles, because they're a little bit more airy. It is not as absorbent, to your point, but it also, because it's not as absorbent, it doesn't get like bogged down as much.
Well, that's true. You can get that the case like with waffles. You can give that the case with waffles, but you can also say the same thing about pancakes too. It also depends on how syrup heavy-handed you want to be. If you want to drown your shit in syrup, then what's going to happen? Your shit going to be drowning in syrup. I think that's a general rule for anything. But pancakes are a little bit more efficient in that you want to put this amount of syrup on? Okay, that's fine. You don't have to add any more syrup. You don't have to do that. You can just let it sit right here and let that shit just ooze all the way in. Kobe, what's your point?
You talking my point earlier. The fact that you can do a chicken and waffle, to me, like, that alone.
Yeah.
That alone is just going to take waffles to a whole different level. Like, come on, man. You a brunch man of all people.
I'm trying to get off of Chick-fil-A because of moral reasons. But, dog, pair of Chick-fil-A tenders with some Waffle House waffles. Oh my God.
It hits. It hits. Oh my and you're God. Right. As a brunch king myself, you know, I dip and dab in different brunches, you know, like I do these hoes. That's fine. I do it. That's fine. You know, that's fine. I understand what you're saying. I said chicken and waffles is one of the most culturally relevant types of things ever. It has a cultural historical roots of African American men coming home from graveyard ships and wanting to mix up both chicken and waffles together. It has a great historical roots. That's why I said chicken and waffles are one of the great historical roots. It's historical and it just tastes good because it's that good combination of sweet and savory and saltiness that you get within all that. I give y'all that, right? That's true. I give you that. I can't even compare that. But I will say making a bacon pancake also has the same thing. You can also get
How do you know this, Jesse? Did this nigga just give us the historical breakdown of chicken and waffles? Like,
bro, what? Like,
hold on, dog. Did you just really break that down for
who
us?
Who are you?
Like, I'm a nigga who loves pancakes. That's what the fuck I am.
What?
That's who I am.
He really just broke down chicken and waffles in a historical context. Like, he really just did that.
Wow.
Only Jesse.
Only Jesse. I think only Jesse, only the It's Just Jokes podcast, but we are sadly out of time.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay. All right.
Pancakes are still the goat. Y'all need to suck my dick. Pancakes are the goat.
Why did you make yours contentious? We were having a nice time.
I just wanted to add a little sprinkle in there.
You saw the way he came for me. He's like, no, you had your time. He's like, this is my argument. I was like, okay. All right.
Oh, man. But no, that's a good argument. Like, I love pancakes. Again, if we're splitting hairs, I got to go waffles just because I feel like you can get a really good waffle at a lot of places. And pancakes are a little, they're not as volatile as French toast, but like IHOP pancakes and Cracker Barrel pancakes are not the same. You feel me?
I mean, hotel and pancakes, Holiday Inn pancakes are
but that's a smaller line to straddle. You feel me? Like,
that's not a small line to straddle. Nigga, like, it's the same thing. You compare restaurants to restaurant. I'm comparing hotels to hotel.
No, but I'm saying like the taste difference between the two. Like, the taste of a Cracker Barrel pancake tastes very different than an IHOP pancake.
Well, that's different.
And you prefer one over the other. That's
different because Cracker Barrel puts racism in their food. Like, that's
of course. That's why we go there.
It's the old Southern racist thing. Like, that's different. That's a whole different strategy.
When we went there, they were like, y'all want two seats, boy? Like, yeah. Like, there's two.
Can they be preferably in the back, please? I need to exit.
I can taste the brutal assaults my ancestors had to endure. Jesus Christ. Every single bite. Every single bite, I hear a scream of my great, 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 great grandfather. No, that's what they're saying. That's what they're saying every time I bite. Oh, no. Dear God.
But I get bacon that's really crispy. It crackles like a whip.
Oh, my God. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. This was really fun. For Jesse Pink, for Kobe Price, for Derek Small, I'm Joshua Chapman. And for Dre, thank you guys so much for listening to and into our next episode. And we'll see you guys. Oh, for JLZer and Kingboy, thank you for the outro music. I almost forgot. Thank you guys for the outro music. We appreciate you. Tune in next time and see you guys then.
Wear your damn mask, people.
Wear your mask. Where you
it at? Goes over the nose, all right? Over the nose. It's too
hot. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at It's Just Jokes Podcast.
@jokes_podcast. Nigga.
I know.